what our promise should be, I think. I do think we, that's why I think we need to educate people to think more broadly, to think more analytically, and to connect the research with the practice in such a way that they can apply what we can figure out works and what doesn't work, and so forth. But we do have to recognize that there are huge areas in which we really have to work with other people if we're going to resolve some of the major social problems of this country, and we surely have got them. You know, they're all about us.
Do you think that the financial remuneration that is provided for social workers is a reflection of how others view social work as a profession?
To some degree it is. To some degree it's because we're a women's profession. We're largely occupied by women. Everybody talks about it as a women-dominated profession, but I think that's too strong a language because we don't dominate even our own profession. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's men that tend to run it,
right.
But which is very interesting.
Directors of agencies.
Yes, overwhelmingly.
For a long time.
Overwhelmingly. Mm-hmm. It's changing, but that's been slow to change for a profession that has as many women as we have. And we know that women just all over, whether they're social workers or whatever, get paid, what is it now, about 58 cents on the dollar to what men get paid in terms of comparable pay for comparable work. So that is clearly a factor. But if you look at the teachers as a model, if you wish to, they began to boost up their salaries when they organized. I mean, they had lousy salaries and so forth. So they didn't really sit around and wait at a given point for people to pat them on the back and say, you're a good kid. They declared themselves, and social workers have to decide if that's something they want to do. And some of them do, and some of them don't. But there's no question that that made a difference. It made a significant difference all over the country. Not everybody likes the difference that it made, but it certainly boosted up the salaries, amongst other things. And probably improved working conditions to some considerable degree. So I think, yes, I think it does reflect that. It reflects the fact that I don't think we negotiate very well on our own behalf most of the time. And that, I think, is a women's issue. I think women do not learn to negotiate as hard as men do and won't declare themselves. Well, I see it here. I see it in the university with women faculty. And generally, they're not as good going in and pounding on the desk and demanding for themselves as the men are. And so there's some significant differentials.
I would think, and I would like your thinking on this, the fact that men are still viewed as major income and providers, that women may be regarded as
don't need it,
right, and therefore when they go in it isn't quite as significant as when a man says, hey, I have a family, even though his wife may be working, he says he has a family. And of course, on the other hand, the question is whether we're not getting men in the profession because the money isn't there.
Well, it's all of those things, I think. During the 60s, when the salaries in social work went way up because they really got pegged to the federal standard, with the poverty program and whatever, and mental health, those all got geared at that point to the federal standard. So our salaries went up considerably in that period. Men were flocking into the field. I mean, we began to have almost 50-50 between men and women for a couple of years in the late 60s in our student body in the master's program. And then began to drop off again, and now we do have men, but they're not anywhere near 50%. So I do think that's a factor. We also, you know, one of the major supporters of men in social work education in the 60s was the professional education program that the state sponsored with largely with federal money for state employees. And that's when very large numbers of men came in because they got 90% of their salary while they were in school. And that made a difference, made a significant difference. So I think all of those things are factors.
Do you have any knowledge as to whether these men stayed in the field of social work after they left here?
Yeah, I think they tended to, but they went up to administrative positions faster than women do. And that's historically been true in social work, as you all know, that men get promoted into administrative positions much, much faster. Now, some of that is that people prefer to hire men as administrator. I mean, there's a real gender bias in that, no question. Some of it is that women buy into some of that too and don't always either want to or demand or request or whatever the appointments to administrative position. They don't always want it. And that, I think, is part of the bias that also you sort of absorb that with the way you think about yourself.
Yes. Is there anything being done in the school of social work here in terms of encouraging women to take that kind of step forward?
We have met with women students and whatever. We never get a huge number of students in our program that are really on fire with feminism, but we do get a number that would like to be administrators at whatever and don't see the role models for themselves there. So faculty, doesn't I particularly have to, I think, and men faculty can help with that too, but women faculty and the field has to.
You know,
they have to see it when they go out into their field placement and so forth.
Right, and to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, in retrospect, Barbara, is there anything in your career that you would have, as you think back, done differently, would have liked to have seen changed?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, many people feel that women of our generation, and I think it is true, lost a lot of ground in their advancement in their professions because they stayed home and took care of their children for such long periods of time. And generations following us don't do that for that long a period of time. But I've never regretted that. I've always thought that was time well spent. And although there's no question it affected my career, I am not at all sorry that that's a decision that we made. I feel badly when I see my daughters and other people's daughters, if they wish to stay home, really not able to because of career pressures.
Right.
Sometimes it's financial pressures, but also because of career pressures. And I think that's too bad, that they should be free to make the choice. And what we need is good enough child care, et cetera, that if people want to make that choice, they can. And if they want to make the choice not to, that they are free to do that. So I've never regretted that, although I've no question it affected my career. There's no question about that. So I don't feel that that was other than quite wonderful, even though it certainly haven't. If my whole goal was to promote my career in my life, then that would not have been the right decision to make. But it wasn't.
But it felt right for you.
And as I look back, I'm really glad I did that. And I think it was a good decision for us. It was a correct decision for our family, for me. And it was what most everybody else was doing, of course. I mean, we were hardly original in that, but it was. And I never really aspired to great big administrative work. I never really wanted to be a dean, for example, and so forth. And that may be just part of that woman's issue that we talked about.
Yes.
But I just never really wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And if I were to want to be, I would have had to leave Pittsburgh anyway and drag my whole family with me. And although I think my husband would have been quite ready to do that if that's what I thought I wanted to do, if he could have worked out his employment and career arrangements also. But I never was really eager to do that either, to disrupt my whole family.
But just in terms of doing that kind of work as a dean, I wonder if some of the hesitation was the amount of time that would be demanded of you.
Although I work huge long hours, always. I mean, I'm just sort of really compulsive about my work, and probably sometimes unreasonably so, but my hour demands were enormous here. I mean, I carried a huge amount of responsibility. I may not have wanted to have to make the kind of decisions deans make. I mean, I think that's possible.
Right.
When I think about what seems distasteful to me about it, those budget decisions and whatever, always seem unpleasant to me to have to deal with, and I never really cared to deal with those if I could avoid them.
How do you feel about the fact that today women do put their children in child care or get somebody to be available to them while they pursue their career. I just wondered what you see in terms of the future for these children. They may have been in the best of childcare circumstances, but as you said, there was something real good in your being available to your children to nurture them as they grew up and before you went on with your... What do you think it's going to be with these children?
Well, I think if they get good, loving, supportive daycare, if they really get that kind of care, I think they're probably going to be fine. I think women who don't go out to work but want to and resent not going are not good mothers.
Right.
And what they need is quality rather than quantity of time with their kids. And some women do grit their teeth and find that a burden. And I think if that is a burden for you, your kids don't profit a lot from your sitting around being irritated about it. But you have to then take responsibility to get good, competent, loving child care with good continuity, whether it's in the house or out of the house. And I think many of those kinds of arrangements for child care are marvelous. I mean, you do see marvelous.
On the other hand, many of the women who are as much as they give the finest of care to their children are guilty. Struggle
well,
daily with feelings of guilt in terms of their limited time, their limited involvement with seeing their children grow up.
No question, there is no easy solution. Mm-hmm. And what we do need is probably, not that there's a quick fix for any of that, more flexibility in the workplace for women than they generally are given.
In what way?
Well, not to work full hours, not to have to work evenings if... if that's what's called for, that's not appropriate for women with young children, and to be able to be there when you're needed, when the child is sick or whatever. I mean, the workplace really has, if they're going to have women in the workplace, which we surely have them, they're going to have to get more flexible, I think. But they've not been quick to do that. Some industries in some places are doing that much better than they used to.
Yes.
Or have child care right there at work, which many of the corporations now are doing and so forth, and where the mother can go in if it's a young baby and breastfeed or be there with the child at lunchtime or whatever. You know, those are, I think, the forward-looking things that have to be done, because we'll assume that women are probably going to stay in the workplace. It seems unlikely that huge numbers of women are going to back out of the workplace. I think many women would like to stay home longer after a baby is born than they're able to in most places, and some are able to negotiate that, but a lot aren't. So I think the family leave bill that was just passed is all to the good, and I think, and it's not only children, you know, women are the major caretakers of aging parents, and so a whole bunch of them are really, once they end their child-rearing responsibilities, end up with parents to care for.
Parenting their parents,
truly,
and plus their children.
And so I think that we have to recognize that there's got to be some adaptation in the workplace, and slowly. I mean, that bill passed, 2 years ago, and Bush succeeded in crushing it, and again last year. I think this time, clearly, it will pass through, I hope. I think it's passed the House and is on its way to the Senate. But it did pass before, so we'll assume that it's going to. And it's a burden. True on industry, and ways have to be found to alleviate some of that burden. But I think we have to think about doing all of those things. Having quality care available, giving more flexibility for women, recognizing that when you have children there are demands on your time that you don't have a lot of control over, sick children or whatever.
Isn't it amazing though when you think about the changes that have come about in the last 10 to 15 years in terms of the response to these women's needs, whether it be in terms of providing daycare through their place of work or accepting part-time work, there's been quite a change.
Yes, there has been. I mean, there's lots more that needs to be done.
Yes.
Those women are often put in terrible binds, but and giving leaves and so on, all of that, it has been. It's been real movement.
But you're not worried. You don't have any worry about how these children who are now, many of them growing up from infancy through
childcare arrangement.
Yes, all childcare.
Well, there's some, if they have good childcare, I think we can.
You think that's it?
Most of them make it okay. I mean, when I see Carriage House and see the little ones there, and sometimes they give excellent care. I mean, there are a number of places around.
Yes.
This area,
yes.
And in the Jewish community, and so they give excellent care. And I think, I know that there are those that feel, well, it'd be much better if mothers stayed home, but my sense is that mothers...
This is the photographer, Kate Shore. I have just retired.
That's your phone.
That's my special little message machine. But I think if women don't expect to stay home and grit their teeth, or if they can't, I mean, for
right.
a lot of women, there's not a choice.
That's right.
You know, with the number of single mothers that we have, or people that just need more money to function
right.
as inflation has gone up enough. For a lot of women, that's really not a choice. So we
right.
have to do the best we can do to provide mm-hmm. the best we can for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if people want to stay home, we should provide the best of, that's okay and good for you. You know, in other words, I think we shouldn't have a party line on that. We shouldn't say everybody should stay home or nobody should stay home. We really should give, but you have to give the supportive services then to make it a reasonable choice.
Yes, because sometimes the people who stay home also feel guilty.
Yes.
Because their neighbors are out working and maybe I should be out working too.
Yeah.
Rather than relating to what their needs are in terms of being with their children.
Right, right.
We didn't have that concern.
No, it was assumed that we would stay
yes,
without
yes.
question. And I think to provide supports to families, so maybe the divorce rate will decrease.
Good.
I think the remarriages, particularly with young children, are often so problematic.
Yes.
And even with the best of goodwill, it's a toughie. And the evidence that we have would tell us that whatever we could do to help people be able to resolve differences and not have to split up quite. The divorce rate is encouragingly going down a bit.
Yes.
Just a bit. It is starting to. And I think last year or the year before was the first year it didn't keep going up, and now it seems to be gradually going down. We have to hope that that people can find ways to problem solve and learn how to deal with differences and learn how to mediate and conciliate with each other and not expect everything to be an instant fix.
That
would help considerably.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the split up of families and such, and women being left alone to raise children, is sort of overwhelming.
And with society where families are not always immediately
right.
available. They're living somewhere else and alone
right.
without the support of...
Yeah, and poor women, you know, suffer that much more, even the middle-class women, considerably more so, particularly in the Afro-American community and such.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's difficult, right,
problem.
No question. Tell me, are there any people here, either in... among your professional peers or elsewhere with whom you've had contact and for whom you have a particularly high regard, people you work with that we would like to perhaps know about?
Probably one of those would be Ann Jones. I think you must know Ann,
yes.
who retired several years ago.
In Michigan.
No, Anne Jones from our faculty.
Oh, from the faculty. No, I don't know. We had another Anne Jones in our
right.
class.
This Anne Jones was on our faculty for some years. I think she came on about 2 years after I did, but she retired several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she and I have been good buddies for quite a while and done a lot of work together.
Mm-hmm.
So I would consider her in that category of people here in Pittsburgh. And I would say that a number of my other colleagues have been very good friends at Site, Judy Martin, and David Beagle, before he left here and went to Case, was a very dear friend, was on our faculty, and I do talk to him regularly and keep in touch with him, and I see him as a particularly good friend and good colleague. And then Norma Rafe, who is a social worker, who's also a sociologist here at Pittsburgh, and I are co-authoring a book, actually coming out,
did I do with my briefcase?
Right here.
I have a copy of one of the original versions of this book here. And that'll be coming out by Sage.
And, Advanced Case Management, New Strategies for the 90s.
And that'll be coming out. Sage is publishing. That'll probably be out by June. Mm-hmm. I think we're just doing the final revisions on that now. And and she and I have done a lot of work, a lot of writing and research together. Mm-hmm. I would consider it the chief one.
So you've met some fine people through the profession.
Really.
Outside of Pittsburgh, too, through your contacts?
Yes, through my regional and national activities.
Because sometimes we get kind of in
well,
where
we
are.
One of my dear friends over some years has been Sheldon Goldstein, who is now the National Executive Director of NASW. I knew him first when he was on the staff, and I was on the national board and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then he went to Chicago, and now he's the National Director, and he's just lovely.
Fine. Good, good. Okay, let me just kind of pull this together, since we're interested in the Jewish community particularly, and I just wondered, you've lived in Pittsburgh practically all your life, except for the few times you were away. How do you view the Pittsburgh Jewish community or group among the entire Pittsburgh community? Do you have any thoughts as to how the Jewish community has been or is now, has changed, been a part of the general community of Pittsburgh?
Well, I think there are, you know, we have a wonderful Jewish community, I think, in Pittsburgh in terms of leadership. I think just a remarkable number of capable, bright, dedicated people that give of themselves enormously. In National Council is sort of a prime example,
right.
But I would say in Federation too, generally, and in most of the other Jewish, Hadassah, B'nai B'rith, mm-hmm. etc. Jewish organizations and in the synagogues. I think we have a remarkable group of very competent and able people. As a result, I'm always startled when we aren't as good as we ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
And,
for example,
what
are you thinking of?
Services to the aging. I'm
yes.
thinking of the recent look-see at Riverview and so forth at the mm-hmm. Jewish home. We should be better than we are in that mm-hmm. whole area. And I don't totally. I think I have some hints in my mind as to why that happened the way it did, historic reasons, and not necessarily logical reasons.
Could
but
you
historic.
Share with us?
Well, I think that for some reason the home always kept itself separate and wasn't part of the mainstream of the Jewish community, unlike other cities where it's been tied. So Federation really never had a big hand in it until relatively recently. And it did its thing, and it wasn't as advanced as you look at Philadelphia and see their geriatric center, you know, is wonderful, I think. And as far as I could see in Cleveland, from what I know of what's going on there, it's just, you know, beautiful stuff. We have not been, and that is disappointing to me, although I think it's getting corrected. I think now there is a real effort, clearly through these various committees and studies being put forth to try to make us better than we are. I think there's been more turfism than is healthy, and that happens everywhere, but I do think ours has been more pronounced than you would like to see it, and continues to be between JFCS and JCC and whatever. You don't see huge amounts of wonderful collaboration. You do see a lot of...
Well, there has been collaboration between JCC and JF and CS in recent years. But I'm interested in the Jewish home. And I wondered, do you think that their physical location may have contributed to the lack of...
Yeah,
you know, in Cleveland, the Jewish home is in an area where there are
other things.
Connections, yes.
Well, I think that certainly the geographic location could have been a factor. But I think had they collaborated, had they professionalized sooner than they did, had they really seen themselves as part of the scene,
mm-hmm.
In the most positive sense of the word, that you could have overcome the location from. Mm-hmm. I mean, you hop on a bus, hop on a scooter, hop on a car, you get there in like 3 minutes from Squirrel Hill. Mm-hmm. I mean, although it has the sense of being off the beaten path, I think you could overcome that. I don't think that that's what caused it. I think that probably contributed, but it didn't cause it, I don't mm-hmm. think. I think it was something to do with the personnel that gave such devoted service to the home all those years, but never wanted to let go. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had a board in which all the past presidents were still on the board. I mean, you never were able to move beyond those folks, and they all had great ego involvement in what went on there. And so I think that's astonishing to me that that happened here, but it did, and that is part of our history, that that particular group of very strong people, but very closed in on themselves as far as I could see, very unrelated to the rest of the community, certainly unrelated even what was happening in the field of aging. Right. And unfortunately, in the last number of years, there wasn't a big push to make them look the other way until they got into trouble with money, and then Federation had to move in, and then the doors started to get cranked open a little bit. Even then it took a long time.
Yes.
It still is taking a long time for them to get
rid of the dirt.
And since we're a dreadfully aging community, I mean, we're... I mean,
we have one of the biggest aging Jewish populations.
Absolutely, and
in the
aging in general.
Under
you see it improving now?
Pardon me?
Is it improving?
Well, I think they're working on it. I mean, all of these planning committees and whatever are trying to do something with it. I think there clearly is a recognition that they can no longer stay separated from, apart from the mainstream, and that they have to collaborate, and they have to also get into the 20th century in terms of how they handle all kinds of things. It is it's quite a transition that they're going through, and it's probably painful for a lot of people that I respect in terms of giving of themselves they gave.
Right.
But they did not do it wisely nor well in terms of being on top of where the aging programs are going
and
needs are going. And so I think that's been, to me, sort of a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
But we're, you know, lots of us are working on lots of aspects of it. And with all the good people there are, I think there's a possibility of good movement. I've been, as the head of the Human Rights Committee, working with the Special Needs Committee on special needs for handicapped persons or disabled people. And we had a meeting Sunday night over at the JEI for synagogue and temple personnel to talk about services to special needs. And that was a very nice meeting, and the speaker was absolutely super marvelous. It's a woman who heads special needs for the Jewish Board of Education in Greater Washington, which we don't have. Really.
Yes,
we don't have that kind of body, but she is from that, and she was wonderful. But we targeted three congregations, and the three-day schools were represented, and then a bunch of other people were represented. Well, that's not quickly enough.
No.
We still have to do a lot more pushing. And yet, we do have some wonderful programs.
Yes.
And I think in many areas, we're really way ahead. But in those areas, and the aging one in particular, I mean, special needs, nobody's really ever ahead until you get a good woman like this one in there to push down there, and she's really gotten all kinds of wonderful things going, and we'll hope that we can too. It's the aging one that I think, to me, is most noticeable.
Are there other things in terms of the Jewish life in the general community that you've seen changing, modifying, either for good or for not so good over the years? Is there anything else that you would know of in terms of our Jewish community?
Yeah, I think there is still a relatively low level, probably, of participation in activities and in Jewish life in the Jewish community. I mean, there is a very active group, but I think there's just lots and lots of people that have no contact at all. And maybe that's all right, but I can't feel comfortable about that unless we know why.
Mm-hmm.
And are they getting what they need elsewhere, or what's going on? And I think we do need to take a look at that in terms of how we can outreach. And I think various of the organizations and the temples and the synagogues are trying to do that, to single parents, to
divorced families to intermarried families. There are efforts. Well, these are the folks that I think tend generally to get somewhat left out or half historical.
Right.
Although that certainly, since we started SWIM, for example, that was one of the main reasons we started it,
right.
was that there the people no. in those categories felt like, you know, nobody really paid attention to them at all. And I think it was true, and we did try to do a lot of educating and sensitizing on those groups. But I think there's still a lot more for us to do to be sure that people aren't getting lost in the shuffle because we're being too exclusionary and not inclusionary enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think those are amongst the things that seem to me to make a healthy Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that everybody's going to be equally involved in the Jewish
Never.
Part of it mm-hmm. ever, but at least if people want to be, we ought to be sure that we're available to them and that we're reaching out to them and offering
mm-hmm.
To them the kind of supports that they need.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very, very important.
Very
bad. Yeah.
I just wondered if from your view, too, whether there's the feeling of being a part of the Jewish community is stronger now than it was in times past.
Possibly so. Possibly mm-hmm. so. I think there's...